Welcome to Holton Village. Bruce Eklund will be speaking on Valuing Our Children, Goals of Parenting. So let's listen in on Bruce.
My name is Bruce Eklund, and I'm presenting a class this afternoon on Valuing Our Children, looking at the goals of parenting. It's not a presentation as much as it is a discussion. I look out there and I see lots of people with lots of experience in parenting, and I hope we can use this as a time to identify and come to grips with primarily the issues around and intentions that we have in parenting, looking at what kinds of behaviors we choose in order to bring those intentions about, and then explore a little bit some of the impacts, talk about the impacts on the child and whether they indeed reflect the what our original intentions are from the decisions and tools and skills that we have as parents and we use in our parenting. Let me tell you a little bit about who I am and where I'm coming from in terms of presenting this topic to such experienced people as yourselves. I work at the Snohomish County Juvenile Court, which is in Everett, Washington, just north of Seattle. It's it's the third largest county in the state of Washington. It has some large communities in the southern portion of our county that are fairly closely connected to Seattle. Everett has its own unique history and identifies itself pretty separately from Seattle. In that capacity, I've had two primary responsibilities for the 21 years that I've been there. One is to work with juvenile offenders, kids who have committed crimes, who are in the community, and essentially trying to connect with them in such a way and reframe some of their behaviors and their ideas into things that are a little bit more socially acceptable and perhaps even creating a positive contribution instead of a negative impact on the community. So working with those, with kids that are already pretty angry, pretty upset, pretty distrustful, pretty fearful, and that their behavior is essentially an acting out of some of that, the worldview that they essentially have, which is you gotta get it before someone else takes it. The other half of my job has been working with a program called the Volunteer Guardian Ad Litem Program, where we train volunteers to be special advocates for children whose parents are being charged in dependency court with child abuse and neglect. So these volunteers essentially act as special advocates to represent to the judge during the proceedings what's in the best interest of the child, an independent view, so they're a full party to the proceedings, but they aren't the state who are essentially bringing the charges, nor are they the parents who are essentially defending themselves from the charges. And so it provides an opportunity to look at the issues and the incidents from a more central, child-focused viewpoint. The two, while they may seem to be huge distances apart, are essentially very closely connected. Most of the kids that I deal with as juveniles, juvenile offenders, have a lot of issues that we would call as dependency issues. They really struggle with their relationship with their parents, with relationship with their families, boundary kinds of things in terms of not being able to effectively connect or relate with other people due to the dysfunction in their personal relationships. Research clearly shows a link between child abuse, either sexual abuse or physical abuse or child neglect, with later acting out violent or antisocial behavior. So what I would like to do with today's session is to start out a series that I'm going to be doing this week and next week, looking at a variety of topics around children, particularly valuing our children, putting a positive spin on it, because I think that it's in the process of increasing the sense that we value our children, that we're going to find solutions to many of the cultural, social problems that we have today that are focused around our kids. The issues of youth violence certainly being one that has gotten a lot of press, at least in Washington, over the last couple of years. The way I'd like to do that is to first think about children. One of the things that we all have in common, for sure, is that we were all children once. And part of being a child means that there's certain features, certain images that kind of come to mind when we think about that, not only for ourselves in terms of ourselves being children, but our experiences with children around us, both our own children as well as other children that we come into contact with. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time just brainstorming what are the images of children that you have?
Active. Inquisitive.
If I don't spell these right, that's okay. Inquisitive, did you say?
Yeah.
That's even harder to spell.
And early on, very trusting.
Pardon?
Early on, very trusting.
Trusting. Any another word is innocent?
Fun.
Fun?
Fun. Yeah. Imaginative.
Boisterous.
Loud.
Boisterous. Why don't we just put loud too?
Loving.
Loving. What was the other one?
Loving.
Loving. Why, both of you right at the same time.
Forgiving.
Hopeful.
Yeah, eternally, huh? Yeah.
Dreamers.
They're learners.
Learners.
Love to learn.
Enthusiastic.
Trusting.
So we are doing
it? I think I have to say that's good. Good is double thought.
In some cases, fragile.
Fragile.
And they're vulnerable.
Almost invisible with their emotions. Visible with their emotions. Not just emotional, but, you know, they'll show them. They'll show their anger until they get older. And I'm higher.
With emotions. Okay, what about some of the, I'm sorry.
Dependent.
Dependent, yes. What about some that, children can be very frustrating. They can be things that cause parenting to be not fun. What are some of those?
Strong-willed.
They're
very selfish.
Independent. Independent and dependent.
Demanding.
Demanding. I want, I want, I want.
Time consuming.
Time consuming. They always seem to want more time, don't they? Any Any other?
Very intuitive. I would say intuitive.
Intuitive.
Yes. I know exactly what buttons push on it. Which is good and bad.
Right, right. So they learn quick what, like how to get their weight or what they need to do. FDIR.
They're imitators.
Imitators. Has that got two M's?
No one.
When you think of children, children playing, what are some of the what happens when children play? What are they really doing?
Learning.
Imitating. It's actually their job, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's we think about, oh, they're having so much fun, but. It essentially is the job of children to play, because what in the process of playing, what are they doing? What are they?
Practicing.
They're practicing, okay. And they're experiencing. The goal then of their playing is to have a variety of experiences that they have a new body. They have this world around them that has so much that they don't understand. And their way of interacting with that world, of discovering that world, is to participate with it. Children have some significant differences in terms of the way that they learn compared to us as adults. And we all sit around here and pretty cognitive, thinking and talking, using language. And children are in the process of discovering language, and so they don't see it necessarily as a tool. They maybe begin to, but especially young children, their way of communicating is not through words or through thinking, but it's through their experiences and through their emotions. So that the process, the things that happen for children, the way children think, the way they process materials, the way they learn and make changes in their lives is significantly different than the way we do as adults. And I think that part of the, probably the one of the most important things, I think, for parents to realize is that children are not small adults, that they have their own agenda that's not necessarily related to defying their parents. That when they choose to not do something, or if parents say you don't go do that, and the child beelines over it directly, tries to do that, the cognitive kind of thing is thinking is that child is defying me. And in most cases, I think the child is discovering what their limits are, discovering what the boundaries are.
The word I thought of was experimenting. They experiment with.
Good. Good word.
Their boundaries and their abilities.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Trial and error. Awesome. Trial and error and repetition are the things that the children find. I'd like to share a couple of things with you. This is from a... called Resources for Child Caring. It's from the Minnesota Child Care Training Project in 1986. And they came up with a list of some items that I think help encapsulate for us an understanding of some of the uniqueness of child development. No two children are alike. Each one is different. Each child is a growing, changing person. Two, children are not small adults. They do not think, feel, or react as grown-up people do. Number three, children cannot be made to grow. On the other hand, they cannot be stopped from growing. Number four, even though children will grow in some way, no matter what care is provided for them, they cannot reach their best growth possibilities unless they receive care and attention appropriate for their stage of development. Five, most children roughly follow a similar sequence of growth and development. For example, children scribble before they draw, but no two children will grow through the sequence in just the same way. Some will grow slowly while others grow much faster. Children will also grow faster or slower in different areas of development. For example, a child may be very advanced in his language development, but less advanced in his motor coordination. Six, during the formative years, the more successful a child is at mastering the tasks of a particular stage of growth, the more prepared he will be for managing the tasks of the next stage. For example, the better a child is able to control behavior impulses that she has as a two-year-old, the more skilled she will be at controlling behavior impulses she has as a three-year-old. Seven, growth is continuous, but it is not always steady and does not always go smoothly ahead. You can expect children to slip back occasionally. Eight, behavior is influenced by needs. The active 15-month-old baby who touches, feels, and puts into his mouth everything about him is responding to a growth need, not just being a nuisance who gets into everything. Number nine, children need to feel that they are loved, that they belong, and that they are wanted. They also need the self-confidence that comes from being able to meet situations adequately. And finally, it is important that experiences which are offered to children fit their own maturity level. If a child is pushed ahead too soon, and if too much is expected of him or her before they are ready, failure may discourage them. On the other hand, a child's growth may be impeded if parents or caregivers do not recognize when he is ready for more complex or challenging activities. Providing experiences that tap into the skills that the child feels confident in, as well as some new skills, will challenge them and provide the balance of activities which facilitate healthy growth. Parenting is a complex puzzle. It's something that is hard work, and takes a lot of time and energy, not only to do the tasks that are needed, but to figure out what it is that we need to do. What I would like to do at this point is to talk about what the vision, mission, and values are that we have for parenting. What are the things that that as parents come to mind as the most important, or the issues that we really want to accomplish in our parenting. We know that children are a lot of things, and some of them are positive, some are negative. Most of these are related directly to how we as parents impact our kids. And so then our job as parents is to come up with some kind of a goal or vision for what it is that we want to accomplish for the next 18 years of our life as our children are dependent upon us. So what would you perceive to be the parental intention? Are your parental intentions remembering back if you need to, or thinking right now in terms of what your goals are?
My goal as a parent, when my children were born, I always said, if I do nothing else as a parent, I want my children to grow up with a strong sense of self, self-esteem. So that to me was very important.
Okay, and so that's a...
Is that the kind of thing you mean?
Yeah, you bet. Mm-hmm. Sense of self.
That's my primary goal too, is the security in themselves and their Christian life.
security and their Christian life.
Spiritual life.
Spiritual growth. Is that?
Provide guidelines that don't kill creativity and enthusiasm.
Creativity.
I think another one is to instill respect.
As a parent, you have to have yourself under control. I had two very active children. I read Parents Magazine, did well. Go well the first 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks, the next one came out, I had more problems.
Okay, so.
Take care of self, I guess.
Yeah, care for self. For parent. That doesn't say what I wanted to say. Care of yourself as a parent?
Mm-hmm. As a parent.
Yeah, stay. Okay, care for self as a parent. Care for self as a parent. That's good. Yeah, I don't want to bring in the implication that somehow that's the goal of the of your child is to care. I think that's a different issue.
I think for me, it's something I'd like to do is to be able to help my kids discover their own gifts and to have a sense of purpose in their life.
Good. How about a broad sense of honesty?
I don't quite know how to phrase this in short terms, but what we try to do with our children is to let them know that the things they did outside the home were just as important to us as what we did outside the home. They're always letting them know that we were interested in their activities, their friends, that type of thing.
That's good. How can we phrase? One piece of that I hear is kind of you've instilled an internal locus of control sense so that they are basically responsible within themselves, but that's connected to, that they have that kind of growing out of the family?
Well, that's part of it, but I know growing up, my parents were interested in what I did, but never showed that interest by being places. Like, for instance, they never went to PTA, they never went to athletic events. I was supposed to go home and tell them what happened, but they never could find the time to come. And so when our children went to school, either my husband or I always were able, one of us was always there to see if they had an activity during the school day or after school. Mm-hmm. We were always there. And when they got in junior high and senior high and were active in sports and other extracurricular activities, we one time said, "Are you embarrassed that we come to everything?" And they both said no. That they were glad to have us there. It would seem odd for us not to be, where we had a lot of parents where the kids didn't want their parents there. So I don't know what
I'm saying. So participation in child's activities.
I guess.
Is
or validating the child's interests.
Yes, that's very good.
Validating child's interests?
Yeah. Because we're like you, we're at everything, but I'm amazed at how often we're the only parents there. Only a few others are there. They come in, parents just drop their kids off.
Well, I think I was fortunate too. I was a teacher and was able to get time off, and my husband was a salesman where his time was free. So we were able to balance so that one of us, and that's not always convenient for both parents because of their job situations.
Most of the things that we've come up with here are are things that show active participation and that require a sense of activity. And some of them, can you help me now? Is there anything else, any other one that...
a sense of service to others or helping others.
Service to others. Okay.
Well, one here that I think is probably pretty important is helping kids reach their potential.
All right. Discover gifts. Maybe can I add it right here? Would that be okay?
Sure.
Discover gifts and reach potential. One other thing that I guess that I had a sense of that I don't see on there is this is a is problem solving skills, is an ability to be able to problem solve, and conflict resolution, deal with conflict. Skills. We've run out of room, so I guess we've run out of ideas. what I would like to do with this is, just because of the time constraints, we can't go through all of them, but I'd like to maybe group and choose two or three that maybe are similar, or group them so that we have two or three to look at, and then go through those two or three and begin to so we have a chance, at least on a couple of areas, to go through the whole process. Are there any obvious kind of groupings that you can see?
I think self-esteem and validating interests kind of go together, because I think validating our interest helps with our self-esteem.
Uh-huh. Okay. Validating interests. Certainly, self-esteem is a strong rooting of doing or kind of support and foundation for doing a lot of these. It's difficult to be respectful when you don't have a sense of self-esteem. Discovering gifts. It's hard to discover gifts.
This didn't get written down, but. One thing that I find very important for me and for my small children to reinforce, even when they're real little, is to remind them to be kind to people. So that's, I didn't mention it, but what I was thinking was that fits in with respect and some things that are outward towards other people. And then there's several of those that are more inward, like your own spiritual growth. So I think of self-esteem as something or independence and discovering gifts. Those are
internal
things that you're working on for the person's own sense. And then the other ones that I named, the respect, kindness that I just said, and honesty, those things are more that have effect on other people. Do you see?
Right.
So maybe
right.
What
so there's internal, and then there's external, in a sense, of the kinds of things that we want to create for our children.
So maybe those are kind of groupings where you're asking for groupings.
Okay. So the goals, the vision that we have, am I hearing this right? The vision that I'm hearing from you is that these are the things that we want our children to have, with the exception of the one that here has to do with the care for. Self. In other words, staying healthy as a parent so that I can perhaps bring these things. But is that what I'm hearing? Are the goals, the way that we envision goals for our parent or for our kids is based on what we want our children to have when we're done with the dependency phase of our parenting process? Is that an accurate? So then what you're talking about in terms of the internal and the external is that there's two basic, the one is that we need this sense of of connectedness with the world around that's kind and that's respectful of others, caring of others, and service to others. And the internal has to do with that self-esteem of discovering their gifts, of feeling themselves to be wondered or valuable
their spiritual
people,
growth.
The spiritual growth. Okay. Well, let's...
No, that doesn't really change even if you're both good.
That's
I
true.
I think as a good parent, I think you have to carry that through to adulthood as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you do it differently.
Right.
You
right.
do them all.
Well, let's focus, at least for the sake of this exercise, on we're dealing with when our children are young. And certainly, that's a whole nother issue in terms of the ongoing and the expectation of continuing relationship with our children as they grow old. I think that for the sake of our discussion here, in terms of beginning to look at some of the decisions that we make about how to accomplish these goals, let's focus on self-esteem as the primary internal one, and knowing that there's this whole host of things that is connected with self-esteem and the other goals that go with it. And which one do you want to look at as the external? Problem solve, conflict resolution. Okay. Let's do. And I think I'll just add to that connected to the world. Okay. As we make decisions as parents, there's always a host of variables out there. The variables increase as our children grow older. As children are real young, obviously our involvement with them is the total picture for the child. And so that emerging out of this, we're going to have different skills and tools that we need at various stages. And it's okay to think we're all going to be at different stages. We probably all think about parenting from where we are or where we remember back to certain parts of parenting. What are the things that you think back to that deal with the issues of self-esteem, that strong sense of self, that internal growth, the spiritual growth of your child?
Praise is one thing from parents for the wonderful whatever it is they're doing.
Modeling.
Unconditional love.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
That no matter what mistakes are made, no matter what they've done, no matter how angry I get, I still love them.
Okay, and how do you show that? How are you able to show unconditional love?
I'll tell them if nothing else. I'll tell them I'm angry, but I still love them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they understand that. I'm always there for them.
Okay, so there's that sense that they tend to not necessarily understand the words as much as I would say that you being always there for them probably makes that a stronger statement and adds value to your words than just to say that. It's fairly easy to say that.
Yeah.
Whereas it's the repetition, it's the experience then that I would contend is the experience that they have of you always being there. That brings them that sense of unconditional. So it's for children in particular, I think, that their sense of, for you to say that, but have it happen inconsistently, is that the words are gonna lose their meaning. So, okay, modeling.
Basically, that's form of modeling, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Listening.
listening. And what does listening do?
Prevents whining.
Yeah? Yeah?
Says they're valuable. Yeah.
Okay,
it's an acknowledgement.
It's an acknowledgement of their that they're valuable. It's a part of what she was talking about here in terms of that sense of presence and that sense of attention.
I think this falls under listening, but it has a slight different twist to it, and that is always, for me, what was important with my children was always acknowledging their emotions and their feelings no matter what they were. So if they wanted to really be angry and stomp their feet, I never tried to stop them. They could choose to have as many tantrums and Nordstroms as they wanted. It wasn't going to change my behavior, but you know, they didn't last long because it never changed my behavior. But just acknowledging that, hey, this is okay, you're angry, and go ahead and get angry. Don't use it to change me, but acknowledging that it was okay for them to feel whatever they were feeling. I think that helped build focus too.
Learning to... again, there's that sense of repetition. If that were to happen once, they may think, okay, but when the fourth or fifth time that begins to happen, then the kids begin to sense that this isn't having impact. If you were to do it once and then the next time not do it, and then do it again and then another time not do it, that the children then learn. They learn different lessons than what we're trying to say to them with that.
But I never said don't be angry or this is wrong. I would say, gee, it looks like you're really angry.
Yeah.
And then that
which isn't, which in
you
it,
just acknowledge the fact that they're angry. Okay.
There has to be consistency.
Consistency, that's right. I think that's true.
Allowing them choices.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Respect.
Respect them. Okay, and how can you describe what you mean by that?
That their opinions and their choices are valuable, that they affect the family, treat them like people.
Okay. So we respect their decisions?
And opinions.
And opinions. Okay, let me go back. I didn't do something that I wanted to do here, and that's that as we talk about some of these things, to become more specific in terms of behaviors, of the kinds of choices, so that with modeling, what are behaviors that we as parents would choose to do? I think you brought up modeling, Ken, didn't you?
Yeah.
What kind, can we make that more specific in terms of a behavior?
Well,
it's
a pretty broad category.
Right.
I mean, you know, there are some things underneath that you can probably list. Living by example rather than word.
Yeah.
Practicing what you preach.
Okay.
Perfect consistency.
How about if I do it that way? Is that kind of covered? Mm-hmm. Practicing what you believe. Praising is an action word. Unconditional love. Let's rephrase that. And we had talked about that
because
being the repetition of kind of always being there.
The thing about unconditional love is that you can talk to parents who beat their children daily and they say they're doing this out of love for the child and they call it unconditional. I know it sounds warped, but I think it
could be warped.
There are people who say, I'm doing this because I love my child.
Absolutely. This hurts you more than it hurts me, or hurts me more than it hurts you. So maybe under unconditional love, are you comfortable with the fact that some of these others capture it in terms of the of behaviors, the listening, acknowledging feelings, consistency, you know, that's kind of what we had talked about. Again, what I want to be able to do is find some behaviors here and then begin to look at what impact those behaviors have
on children.
Hugging. Okay, we'll put that's hugging. Nice. Yeah.
More positives than negatives.
Well, what I want right now is the kinds of behaviors that we would choose as parents that would create self-esteem in our children.
Right, the word praise bothers me just a little bit. I think perhaps along with praise you need to have words of encouragement or the praise to a specific not just praise, you did a good job. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be more specific than that so that the child can buy into and they know what they are being praised for.
Praise,
more
so.
Specific.
Praise of specific behaviors?
Did you say use the word honesty under after praise?
Yeah, just a minute, I didn't hear. What did you, praise of what? Did you say?
Words of encouragement.
Yeah. Okay, words of encouragement.
Yeah, like. You really did a good job. You thought through your solution
right.
or something as opposed to just,
right.
that's good. Yeah. It's what they specifically did that was good. Why did you choose to say it was good?
It's also saying, oh, that picture is wonderful. You chose wonderful colors. You can't see what it is.
Sometimes that can go down here with allowing choices, too. As you allow choices and then they make a decision, you have a real good opportunity of saying, oh, that's a nice dress, or that's a good choice. Yes?
Where would you place something like baptism and God esteem, two things that are really crucial to how we act toward our children?
Okay. Probably, I mean, we can add that as a specific because that was one that was raised in terms of the issue of spiritual growth. And so having, providing opportunities for the child to become a member of a church family, to see that as important, I would see that both coming as the parent valuing it and participating in it, as well as caring for the child enough to have the child be a part of it. So, baptism, Sunday school. Confirmation. Okay, well let's begin with this one and move over to the other column with these. We'll move this thing down and go with the last half of the board with that. What happens to children? What is the child's response to their observation of or the imitation of these? What is the impact then that it does have on the child when words of encouragement are given for them to doing a certain task? What's a specific result?
Reinforcement of whatever it was.
So what does that reinforcement do?
They do it again.
Okay. So you get, then, repetition of behavior. And why does that happen, do you think?
They feel good.
Why do they feel good?
They want to please you.
Because they want to please you. Okay. The role of the parent in terms of the child's sense of well-being is 100%. The child... the whole world for the child, especially early on, is the parent. And the parent is the lens, is another way of looking at it, is the lens through which the child sees the world. So that as the parent represents that world to the child, then that's the world that the child begins to see. So if they're encouraged, we get repetition of the behavior. What about practicing what you believe? Are there any others that we want to say under that? Under the words of encouragement? Okay. Okay, what about practicing what you believe?
And you're asking, what is the child's reaction to this? Like, if I practice what I believe, what's the result in the child of my doing this?
Right.
Imitation.
Hard question. Imitation.
Okay, imitation. And why?
They want to copy the parent that they love.
Okay. So to a certain extent, that's kind of part of their job, isn't it? That's part of learning about that world around them. So that there's... One of the words we came up with over here is that sense of they're inquisitive, they're wondering, they're always looking at what we're doing. And then how many times I remember watching my kids play and hearing myself in what they were saying, or hearing my wife in what they were saying. I mean, you could visibly, they were practicing kind of being who we were. And it's kind of a scary thing as parents. It's one of those things that when you think of how all of us have our own issues and own needs and our own things that we're kind of struggling with, and when we're in our 20s and 30s, we don't have all the answers. And we know we don't, though we sometimes like to think we do. But as our children begin to imitate us, it's an amazing responsibility that's suddenly laid at us. Yes?
I best think of it now as my boys become drivers of our cars, and how I acted when they were real small, going home to Grandma and Grandpa, and I was talking about, geez, you got to eat two meals, and don't our parents understand, we can't do those, and everybody in the, you know, going down the highway is in my way, and they get out of the way, and now all of a sudden, wait a minute, now I got to change this, now I'm driving the car.
Don't
fall so close, Simon. Yeah.
Yeah, driver's ed was a real education for me.
Well, it's just like I thought I knew what I was doing, but no. Back up, start over.
Glenn.
Isn't part of it the goal or the hopefully the response is their trust in the world, that you're creating their image of how the world works?
Life goal setting.
Yeah. Who to trust, who not to trust?
No, more their sense that the world can be a trustworthy place, or is it's not. Well, I guess the negative is easier to describe. The cynicism that you see among some kids fairly early on, I think, stems in part because their parents don't practice what they believe.
I think that's a real key, a real important point in terms of if we talk about we tend to have better words very often for the negatives. It's just like we talk about abuse, and we kind of have a sense of what abuse is, and so then in talking about abuse, we get into this attitude of being able to say, oh, look at how those kids are, or those people are treating their kid. Why, that's abusive. But we don't have the other side. You say, oh, look at how that parent is treating that kid. That's nurturing. Yeah. You know, it doesn't sound right. It has a different, we struggle with those words in the positive, but we're pretty good at defining those words in the negative. So, and that's certainly one of them. I think the research shows that somewhere between the first 6 weeks and the first 6 months of life is when the predominant amount of that view of the world piece is done by the children. So that if their needs are being met, if the world is essentially a predictable place where there's consistency and patterns that they can see, and that when they cry they get some attention and they begin to connect some of those things, and the brain development is huge during that period of time, that their sense of the world is a powerful a part of what they experience, what their environment is, and how people relate to them. So I think that's true, that practicing what you believe, that creating for the child a sense of what the world is like, and creating a microcosm essentially of what you believe the world to be as an adult gets created in a microcosm for the child. Yes?
I work with the same program in a volunteer way that you spoke of, only we call it CASA for Diane.
Yes, yes. Where are you from?
Court-appointed special advocate, but it's the same thing, in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, yes.
And when you talk about these little babies that don't learn to trust, the words they use are failure to thrive. I don't know if that's universal words, but these little babies that don't, when they cry and nobody goes into them and they just feed them once in a while, and the babies pretty soon, they don't cry anymore. They just get quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. And there comes a point where it's very, very difficult to raise up that trust that you're talking about.
Comes a point where they die. That lack of attention can be cause for children to die. It's a major reason for the dependency, the legal part of the system, the child protective system, to become involved immediately. It's one, the failure to thrive as a medical condition that is that the urgency is just is immediate. Thank you.
Just a question regarding one of our children I'm thinking of. They're all three adopted Koreans. And our middle boy, if he laid there in that crib and was never attended to, and we received him as about 5 months old, is this where you're speaking to that?
Right, exactly. And
that's exactly what you're speaking.
I think it's exactly what I'm saying. And I would say that for children that experience some kind of neglect or abuse within the first 6 months of their life, that it's not that they can't change. It's that they get a different route. They have to go. It's harder to do that. You know, if that's the developmental stage that's supposed to happen in the first 6 months, it's harder to do that when you're two. Okay, you can do it, but it takes a lot more energy on the part of the parents. It takes a lot more understanding and work, and you have to take a longer time to pattern the same type of thing for the child. It's like when I work with kids who are 14 and 15, that have been through this. They already have a worldview, and the worldview does not include anybody else's rights. There's no boundaries. Doors don't mean a thing. You know, they believe in burglarizing. That's their faith. You know, and so to try and get them to re-experience that sense of trust is an important it's a long-term process, and you don't do that within 6 months of probation. You have to set the stage for them to be able to get that in some other place. I sense that my answer didn't
we'll talk to you later.
We'll talk to you afterward.
Okay
private.
Okay, well let's go on here then with we've got practicing what you believe. Hugging and lapsing. What's the impact of that?
Touch and love and care for.
Gotta touch.
Center your life. Secure.
Security. What does touch do when we get touched? Like through lapsing or hugging, what does it do?
It satisfies one of the senses.
Okay, it's
renews
a sense.
The love.
Huh?
It renews the love.
Renews the love.
It
connects this touch in a way that feels good to us and in nurturing kind of surroundings, so that it links then that sense. The difference between, you can get touch in lots of different ways. I mean, hitting is a form of touch, and some children who don't get any touch would rather get hit than get no touch at all. And so, but what it does is that sense of hugging and lap sitting creates an atmosphere then for that touch and for physical contact to be in a positive and healthy and a good feeling kind of atmosphere. One of the things that I believe in real strongly is part of lap sitting is reading to kids. And the concept that then as they're snuggled on your lap in the warmth of your arm and feeling the warmth of your body and probably hearing your heartbeat and that sense of reading to them. And it does so many things in just that experience. It gives them a connectedness with language. It gives them a link with reading with something positive and something that they remember with lots of good memories. It gives them a sense in a real powerful place that it's valuable, that stories are valuable, that I'm valuable enough to be read a story. And all of us, regardless of our stage of life, have children around us that we can read stories to. Grandparents and nieces and nephews and just all different, as well as our own kids. So I think that as probably this, in my mind, the single most important activity that we can do as grown-ups in this world is to find every opportunity we can to have kids on our lap and read to them. That if we all did that more, that somehow there would be some resolution in some of these issues more substantial. But certainly that sense of security, feeling good, associated with touching. How about listening?
Well, that goes with self-esteem.
Right.
Well, I think that helps set values.
Sure does. What does the child experience when we listen to a child?
That they have value.
That they have value. And how does the child experience that? If we listen to a child, how do they experience, and why do they experience that as us valuing them?
Because we're taking time out to listen to them. I'm actually interested in them.
Okay. Well, I think everybody needs to, you know that their contributions are important, and I think this is probably a way of giving a child a feeling that his contribution is important.
They're not rejected.
So it's a not rejected.
Probably also develop some verbal skills. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, practice. Practice communicating. Good. You know, how many of you have ever sat and listened to a first grader, a six or seven-year-old kid? They've kind of discovered enough about language that it just kind of goes on and on and on and on and on. And if we were to commit ourselves to listening to everything that a first grader said, we would be dead. I mean, there's just no way that we can do that in all honesty. And so part of our job then as parents in that is being somewhat discerning. We don't have to listen to everything that first graders say, but we need to be discerning so that when there's an important thing that they really want, if they come home from school and they have something to tell us, that we're there for them. But one of the things that I remember about our kids when they were in our daughter in particular in first grade was her constant talking. It was kind of like parallel play. We'd be sitting there working or whatever, and she'd be over there talking. Continuing to talk, and so that there's some of the kinds, and she had no expectation, I don't think, of us, quote, listening to her. She just wanted someone to talk to kind of practice on. And when she wanted us to listen to her, she had some real clear ways of getting our attention, such as, you know, pulling on our pants or grabbing our arm or getting up. I particularly was one that I would kind of blank out or zone out or be thinking about other things. And she'd get right up there, right nose to nose. And she wasn't a real lap sitter. She didn't stay on her laps long. But when she wanted something, she knew how to get our attention. It was, she would get on her laps and get right there. So, but yeah, that's...